Thanks, Graham. Sounds like my voice is coming through all right. So what we've seen as a problem every once in a while is looking at high dynamic range images or displays or even scenes and then wanting to calculate things like a color difference, where C-Lab was really essentially designed for... Too soft? Okay, it's really loud up here, that's why. I'll just speak a little louder. C-Lab is really designed for reflecting materials. So you have a lightness range 0 to 100, and basically the types of colors like you have in the Munsell system. So we could think of low dynamic range or a scene full of diffuse reflecting materials or something like this. I just happen to have a photograph of the Munsell Book of Color, some examples of historical ones. There's no light sources in here. There's no bright highlights. There's no kind of effects materials that would have areas that might look brighter than a diffuse white. So this is the kind of thing that it's very easy to choose a reference white point for setting the adaptation in C-Lab or IPT or a space like that, and then making meaningful comparisons of all the colors in there. But there are a lot of other types of stimuli that don't necessarily have to go into extremely high dynamic range. We've all seen very high dynamic range images. Probably my title should be something more like extended range, where they're a bit more than, say, the 100 to 1 or so ratio of luminances of reflecting materials. And they have things like some highlights. This is actually the Ben and Jerry's factory in Vermont, if you're a fan of ice cream. And it doesn't show up too well here, but we have the clouds, which we generally would think would be white in this scene, the side of the building, these tanks of milk and cream, and they have white highlights on them. There's some highlights here. So they're not extreme dynamic range. It's not like I have a picture of the sun or a bright light facing into the camera, but they're things that, depending where I look, I could choose a lot of different objects as my reference white point, which would then get transformed into 100, 0, 0 in C-Lab. And another example, this is actually the type of thing that kind of got me first thinking about looking at lightnesses above 100 in C-Lab. This is a car with pearlescent white paint. So if we look at this car, there's many places we could choose to be kind of our diffuse white point. And almost no matter what one we pick, there's another place we can find on the car that's clearly still a reflecting object, but it's brighter or lighter if we're thinking in relative terms. And the people that make these kind of paints do the measurements at multiple angles, and some of the measurements will have C-Lab values of 120 for L-star, 150. And they want to set a color difference tolerance on that. And the question is, does that mean anything? Is it meaningful to look at C-Lab values of L-stars above 100. So it isn't just these wild high dynamic range images that I like to look at that can have this issue. There are some real objects with geometrical effects and so on that can cause these kind of stimuli. So the kind of questions I was probing with this work is thinking about C-Lab designed essentially for low dynamic range stimuli, but yet the equations have essentially an unlimited output range. I have a little plot that'll show this in a moment. The power function goes on forever. It doesn't saturate. And our visual system in a given scene does essentially saturate. So the question is, can it be used, one question, or can it be modified fairly simply to be used for these extended range stimuli? And a kind of important point here for the context of what I'm doing in this talk is without resorting to local adaptation, which we do quite often in high dynamic range scenes or images. We'll say, well, the visual system is adapting differently to the different regions in the scenes, and if we knew how to set that, we could calculate C-Lab values locally in every place in the scene. But for some types of stimuli, that's not necessarily meaningful. You don't want your white wandering around because you look at the whole thing and you make the comparisons, and some are higher and lower. So it's different than some of the previous work that I've done, and of course many others, of looking at how we can locally adapt to a scene and render that to what we have. After that rendering, we still might have a high dynamic range image that we're interested in saying, how accurate is our monitor characterization or something like that, and can we map it meaningfully into a sort of traditional color space? So that's the context of what I'm examining here. And I want to make a point up front that what's in this paper is really just the first step. And I'll say I did a little Google image search, like I mentioned the other day, for first step, and this was one of the images that came up. So the journey of 1,000 miles must begin with a single step, and this paper really is probably the first single step. And I have another image that came up at the end, so that'll be my joke for Nathan at the very end of my talk. So let's see what we can do. So I think we're all familiar with the C-Lab equations. We can just focus on L star here, where there's a function of relative luminance. And that function, it's multiplied by 1/16, so they're scaling, is for the most part a cube root. So it's a power function. And there's the linear part at the bottom, but the space is built on a power function. And if we look just at a little sketch here, the power function crashes down into zero for zero luminance, so it goes right down to zero. And the linear part avoids us having an infinite slope, but it still does go right to zero. It doesn't tail off. And then, as I mentioned a minute ago, it keeps on going. So if we get to relative luminances greater than 1 or 100%, it'll just keep going up and up and up and up. And that may be the right thing, but it's questionable. And then sort of a more typical physiological response is more of a sigmoidal function. We actually find these in CKMO2. And what we have there is we'd have a threshold at the low end. So there's kind of a base noise level. And then it would tend to saturate at the higher end. So there's kind of a maximum range of the output of the system. So this would be the input luminance. The output, in this case, would be our perception, say, of lightness. And there's kind of a range there. That range may move around with adaptation. But for this talk, I'm thinking of one fixed level of adaptation and a fairly wide range of stimuli. And we don't necessarily want this to completely clip. We don't want to saturate in that way, but very gradually roll off to give us a range of stimuli and still be invertible. So the green one has this sort of limited output range where the power functions that we're working with in both C-Lab and the IPT space have essentially an infinite range. So a common function used in physiology and vision science is this for the kinetics of the processes that are going on, like with light detection, is the Michaelis-Menten function. And some of you may be familiar with the Nakhon-Ruston equation, which is a special case of this, and the nonlinearity in CKMO2 is as well. But basically what we have is a power function divided by itself, so I would be the input or the intensity of the light. And there's also this additive term, which is, I called it SS just for simplicity of explanation here, which is what's often called a semi-saturation constant or the semi-saturation level. That's where this function reaches a value of 1/2. So when the input intensity is equal to that value, you basically get 1/2. So it's half of its maximum range. That's why it's called a semi-saturation level. And then you can multiply by a value m in front to get a range, how high. It's just a scale factor. And then the exponent kind of gives you the rate of change of that function. How steep is it going to be? If you want to think in terms of perception, that could be the contrast. So that has the saturating characteristic that I was looking for, and it has some physiological meaning. And then the next step is to add an offset there for the threshold at the bottom. So you get, in photographic terms, the toe in the curve, and then the function itself gives you the shoulder. So very familiar curve, nothing too new there. And the question is, can I take the nonlinearities in C-Lab and IPT and replace them with this sort of function, not mess up the space too much, but get some of those properties of taking wider ranges of input data into the meaningful perceptual range to do sort of color space comparisons? So I started with some assumptions, sort of a theoretical construction here. And in hindsight, standing here before you today, I don't necessarily like all my assumptions anymore, but that's the way science goes. And we'll keep improving them. But where I started was that I wanted the semi-saturation to be at L star of 50, so our middle gray. I was fixed on that idea that we have a middle gray, there's contrast lighter and darker from that, and that was the point I wanted the curve to be in the middle of our output response. You know, thinking of L star going 0 to 100, I wanted that semi-saturation in the middle. So that turns out to be a relative luminance of 0.18, so our 18% gray. And that, by definition, puts the maximum at 100. If we're halfway at 50, it's going to saturate at 100, and that has an impact on the results that we'll see in a minute. I added just a 0.02 offset. That was just kind of a theoretical guess. That's obviously something that could be refined as well. And again, that Michaelis-Menten function with the threshold for the offset. And what I did is a little different than typical. I just essentially drew the function that minimized the absolute sum of the error, the overall error. And my thought there was I wanted the sort of overall size of the space to not change. So there's places where the function's lower, there's other places where the function's higher, and that all cancels out. So it's not an RMS minimization, but it's actually the absolute deviations in the diffuse range, the range from an L star 0 to 100. So the kind of function we get, might not be able to read these labels, the blue curve here is, this is for C-Lab, so this is the power function with the linear offset or linear part at the bottom. And as I mentioned, it will keep going. And then this green line is the sigmoidal function with the assumptions that I just described. And you can see here's 100 right there, and it's starting to asymptote. This is at a relative luminance of 1.5. This is the same plot that's in the proceedings. So it's asymptoting there, and you can just start to see the toe here. It's really a small offset, so if I did a log plot, you'd see it tailing off. And that, so in the range up to 100 in L star, it's right about here. So it's the new function's a little low here, a little high here, and a little low there. It's kind of like a metamer. It all cancels out in the sum. And that gives us a function that looks like this with an exponent in that equation I just described of 1.5. That happens to be what does that fit. I also put in a couple factors for surround and luminance. These are completely theoretical. So it's the concept, if the surround gets brighter, the perceived contrast increases. If the overall luminance of a scene gets higher, the contrast increases. And you can basically just use these factors to modify the exponent. And you can play with these and watch the curve get steeper and shallower. And I haven't done any testing on that. We know the trends. We know this is kind of the right direction, but it's just a way to fine-tune the space if you wanted to make it more of a overall appearance space. In IPT, the equations are fairly simple. We transform into an LMS type of space. And then again, there's a function. The function in the standard form of IPT is just a power function with a 0.43 exponent. And then we transform into those IPT dimensions. So essentially the same process. So two for one here, two color spaces in one paper. And again, the same sort of function. Here's that 0.43 exponent. This actually is a pure power function, so you can probably even see in this plot that it gets steeper right at the bottom. It actually goes to an infinite slope right at zero and intercepts at zero. And then again, the fitted sigmoidal function here, also with the semi-saturation constant at 0.5 and saturating here at 1. The exponent on that one is 1.38. Everything else is the same conceptually, the surround and luminous level factors. So that's essentially the derivation of the idea of these spaces, is replacing them, the power functions, with something that behaves a little bit better for a wider dynamic range. And by extension, that behaves better for a wider color gamut, because a wide color gamut is the ratio of two of these responses is large, and that's what gets you out to very high saturations. So, a little evaluation of how these works. Forgot to acknowledge my co-author, Dave Weibel, who couldn't be here. I'm sure he would have loved to. He did all the computations and things and made these plots. And we had done a paper many years ago now, I was going to say a couple years ago, I think it was published in 2000, that looked at the Munsell renotation colors in various color appearance spaces. And for one thing, we didn't have CCAM02 because it didn't exist, so we threw that into this paper. and evaluated these spaces as well. But just to see what the lightness, chroma, and hue predictions look like in C-Lab, IPT, the high HDR versions of them, and CCAM02. So here's the lightness functions. You can see C-Lab is nice and linear. Essentially, that's the data that C-Lab was designed around. IPT is linear as well. CCAM02 has a little bit of a curve, but fairly linear. And then these HDR spaces, because of what I did in deriving them, have this sigmoidal kind of look. So they're compressing some more information in. And the range of the Munsell colors, here's 10, Munsell value 10, goes to an output level of 90. So diffuse white has been moved in these spaces too because of the way I chose those functions. That might not be a desirable thing. I think it impacts some of the other results. And the same is true for IPT. If we look at chroma, this is where things get very interesting. Let's start with C-Lab, that may be most familiar. Fairly linear results, but you see these are color-coded, so the yellow hues, which you probably can't see in the back, you can see them in the proceedings, are spread out a little bit more than the blues and purples. So that's kind of an eccentricity effect in C-Lab. The chroma scale is a little different for different hue angles. In the HDR version, it actually gets worse. And I think there's two things. There's some impact with the lightness curve, and there's also the fact that these nonlinear curves, I decreased them relative to the original C-Lab for some value, or some chromas in this case, and increased them for others, and that will start to wreak havoc with chroma. So there's a problem that needs to be solved. IPT was never really designed as a chroma scale. It was designed as constant hue lines, and it shows. So the chroma has sort of more of an eccentricity problem, or the scales varying with hue angle than C-Lab, and it got worse. I think there's some problems in this particular plot as well, but it has a similar effect. It spreads out more. I think this plot's showing a little too much. And then CCAM02 up here, just for reference, it's a little nonlinear compared to the Munsell data, and it gets quite a bit of spread at the higher chromas, but just for reference there. So some work to be done on chroma. Again, that's one data set, so Munsell. Here's the hue, C-Lab and IPT, you can see. The prediction of the hue angles is pretty linear, but what you really want to start to look at is the spread of these at any given hue angle. And that gives you a sense of whether that line of constant Munsell hue maps into a line of constant hue angle in a given space. So here's C-Lab, you can see that spread in the blue that we all know about. It gets a little worse. The spacing's about the same. You can see a couple twists and turns in C-Lab. IPT started good, which is how it was designed. Okay. And just expanded a little bit. So I have to wrap up here. I'll skip this. This is a test on the significance of needing two dimensions to describe the constant hue line. Jones Chan, our student, had did a poster yesterday on scaling lightness above diffuse white and showed some interesting results. And just quickly, his results above white are better predicted by the power functions. So a loss for me, but below diffuse white, they were better predicted by the new functions. So there's another point we need to refine, and we have some additional data, and we're gonna have a talk about that at EEI. So just to wrap up, there's some good promise in these concepts, but I don't wanna oversell it as something that's finalized and does something. They cause some new problems, and some more refinement is required. Just quickly to give you some ideas, we can move that semi-saturation constant up to 100 instead of 50, and then we can pretty much fit the diffuse levels of the spaces perfectly. So we can recreate IPT or C-Lab and then have a saturation at 200, and that tends to match Jones's data a little bit better as well. So that's probably the direction to go. An optimal fit to his data is a little different than that. So there's one direction, and then of course all those assumptions can be tested. And as usual, we need more data. Another approach could be to do the sigmoid on lightness and leave the power functions on chroma to preserve those scales. So this was my other image search for first step. A little too brutal, but hopefully it's a first step towards success. And you know, Homer has a different point of view on life. And I just want to thank you and mention that the additional experiments that we did and probably some more fitting to the data will be discussed at EI, and I better stop.
Thank you. So we might have time for just one question. No questions? Okay, we'll move on to the next.